You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, we are back here at the cycling podcast Feminan. We've just about caught our breath after that crazy, captivating, breathless finale at the Tour de France Fan, which is where most of you will have left me and Denny on the top of Alpe d'Huez, still trying to kind of get our heads around what craziness happened with the yellow jersey eventually going to Cashin Nevia Doma. There, my name is Rose Manley, and of course, where would I be without Denny Gray, who joins me here in very different surroundings?
Well, lovely to be here, Rose. Yeah, very different surroundings, isn't it? Another pub on our tour of Wandsworth pubs.
Yes, and we are in Earlsfield, which can only mean one thing, which means the lovely Joe Rousel, who also spent a lot of time in France last month, actually, Joe, didn't you? Covering the Olympics and the Paralympics. It's lovely for you to be joining us here in your hometown, Joe.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. Yeah, I feel I've been in France a lot this summer. I wish I'd learned a little bit more French, but we're still working on that.
You must feel like a proper Parisian, though, Joe, now, surely.
Oh,
it's going to be like Emily in Paris type
very
vibes.
Much like watching Emily in Paris. Now I know where everything is. Yes, yeah, so very much up to speed with my Parisian geography. So, yeah, no, I really need to do a good like Emily in Paris tour of Paris, really, and get all the tourist photos. Now I feel up to speed on the metro and where everything is. But, yeah, no, I feel very up to speed with the Parisian coffee shops as well.
Oh,
so,
fantastic.
Yeah, I'm your girl if you want advice on Paris coffee.
So definitely. We've taken you from Parisian coffee shops and patisseries and bistros to a pub down the road.
Yep. Which is equally fine. Very happy to be here.
Yes, we are. Well, this is, like you said, Denny, the halfway house is where we are. This is our next stop on our Tour de Wandsworth, which has never made it to the high point of the Telegraph, has it?
No.
Yet.
No. But that's, well, I guess, like all best things, we save them to the end. A bit like the summit finish on Alpe d'Huez.
That's
true.
That'd
be some kind of amazing finale.
So you're saying...
I don't know where I'm going with this, actually.
I hope not. Okay, so really, we want to avoid ever going there because that might be the end of the show.
Yes,
entirely.
Maybe.
But Joe, I mean, covering the Olympics and the Paralympics, you know, what was for you kind of the cycling highlight outside of, you know, your personal highlights of the wonderful coffee shops?
Yeah, outside the coffee shops. I'd say Grace Brown, like if we look sort of internationally, and I don't go fully like Team GB, I'd say Grace Brown winning the time trial was one of my favourites. Just because we know she's retiring at the end of this year. We know she's been so close to winning that world title last year, but not quite made it. And that day for the road time trial, it's pouring with rain. Like, it could not have been worse weather. And I was looking at the weather forecast every half an hour for updates, like praying the rain would stop, because I was like, this is not a great advert for cycling, really, if we've got potentially, you know, riders crashing on the course. And it just went perfectly for her, and such a dominant performance. And I was really stunned by that. And also over the moon that Anna Henderson got the silver as well. So overall, that was a really sort of excellent time trial podium from my point of view. But yeah, I'd really say Grace Brown's win was a huge highlight.
Yeah, no, absolutely amazing. And we treated such an amazing road race as well, weren't we there?
Yeah.
Really couldn't have asked for better. I mean, a time trial as a highlight, that's a rare thing, I think, for me. But I mean, certainly also shows we've got the World Championships just around the corner already. And obviously people are touting Grace Brown as one of the firm favourites to do well in the time trial that is coming up. Well, we should tell you, actually, we are going to be talking about the World Championships, not too much about the time trial, because it really is kind of just a few days away already. But we will be talking about the road race. We'll be talking a bit about the Tour de Romandie and the racing that's happened post Tour de France at FAM. And we got a special mini feature this month, which is featuring some riders from that are quite often the sole representative from their nation. So very different from being a member of Team GB in a track squad, Joe, I should imagine. And we're going to hear from Antti Christofferou from Cyprus, Kim Lecourt from Mauritius, and Catalina Soto from Chile, a bit about their journey into the pro peloton and how you know, difficult it was, how they came to be professional cyclists at all, starting out in those nations. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about, well, Joe, I want to hear your kind of reflections from the Tour de France fan, because obviously we heard plenty from me and Denny. Denny is still here. Sorry, Denny.
You carry on. Let's hear.
But yeah, I'd love to hear what your kind of reflection overall was on that race. I mean, it was a real thriller.
I mean, so much drama. I'd say for a lot of good reasons, based on how much talk there was on social media about the race. You know, you can go through each stage and say, you know, criticise team tactics. Of course, that was a big talking point with Demi Vollering's crash when she was in the yellow. But my big takeaway from that was how much people were talking about women's cycling. And you're always going to get that as the profile of the sport raises. People are going to have opinions, and they're going to be strong opinions, and they might not, you know, particularly be saying very nice things on social media to riders, which is, you know, none of us ever want to see that. But I was just blown away by the amount of chat on social media about the race constantly, day after day, the drama. And that final stage, like, it could not have been, you know, we could not have asked for any better, which almost makes me glad in a way of how the race did pan out, that it, you know, it could have been a very, very one-sided race. For the good of the sport, for the good of the entertainment, it was absolutely spectacular. And I mean, I felt for the commentators trying to do the maths on the line at the top of Alpe d'Huez, like the bonus seconds and has she, hasn't she? And yeah, just absolutely stunning. And so pleased for women's cycling and women's sport in general that we had such a close race. It got so many people talking about the Women's Tour de France, and I just hope we can continue to build on that in future years.
Yeah, of course. I mean, having Demi Vollering in yellow and not having her team come back to help her with a crash with 6K to go, that was kind of one of those, it's one of those moments that kind of transcends the women's cycling scene, doesn't it? It's kind of one of those moments that catches the attention of other sports fans and people who just follow men's cycling as well, because it, you know, it was so kind of, well, it was so confounding, wasn't it? I mean, it's such an unusual thing to happen, and it was, like you say, Joe, amazing to see on Alpe d'Huez, you know, the fact that we weren't having just solo riders coming across the line, which is, you know, just a few years ago, that's what it was like. Any kind of big alpine pass, you would just expect riders to come in solo, certainly at the front, you know, and then a gruppetto but behind. So it was great to see this kind of womano a womano action on the bike. Denny, what you know, reflecting back, having a bit of time away from the race, have you kind of seen anything from it that you didn't see at the time?
I mean, I think, well,
away from the cheese,
right?
If you can.
Okay, I'll try. I think for me, a couple of things. One was just what a momentous day that was on the final stage at Alpe d'Huez, the closest ever finish in the Tour de France, men or women, and I think that will be remembered for a long, long time. And selfishly and personally, it was just a real privilege to be there. You know, because I think that's one of the things that I'll just look back on and think, what a moment to witness and kind of soak in and be part of the a very, very small part of the narrative. But I think the other thing is, I finished reading Peter Costensen's excellent book about Alpe d'Huez in the days after that, and he tells the story about how Dutch Corner became Dutch Corner, why Alpe d'Huez became such a firm favourite with the Dutch, and of course, back in the day, in the 70s, when Alpe d'Huez was used regularly, the crowds weren't as big. And we did see, our small disappointments about the race was, although the crowds were enormous in the Netherlands and very good throughout France on the whole, on Alpe d'Huez, the crowds were quite thin. But I hope the excitement from that day and that stage will draw in crowds if the Tour de France fam goes back to Alpe d'Huez. Maybe we'll have a Polish corner. I don't know. You know,
yes.
It'd be great to have. yeah, hopefully that kind of adds to that, the narrative, the history of the women's racing, and draws people to the mountains the next time the Tour de France goes there.
And the crucial question, of course, Joe, that we haven't got to is Belgium a cheese country? That's what everyone really wants to know.
No, I'm glad you asked. I can't name a Belgian cheese. And I have had a good think about it. And I have since Googled it as well. And even the Google results, I'm not really convinced there's any real famous Belgian cheeses. So I apologise to, well, the people of Belgium and to and to Denny, but I can name plenty of French cheeses. I can name Italian cheeses, Greek cheeses. I'm a little bit stuck with Belgian cheeses. So, yeah, sorry, I'm going to go no there.
This was my point exactly. I mean, the debate rumbles on.
It does rumble on. I mean, you did put it to the listeners, didn't you, with a vote?
I did.
And wasn't the conclusion that Belgium is a cheese nation?
They, at the time of looking... Well, the thing is with these Instagram polls is they never end. So I think during the tour, when I did look, people had voted that, yes, it was a Belgian cheese. But, I mean, you know, you can't trust people, can you?
No, as they say in don't trust show. No. I mean, I have found out since that Belgium has 300 different varieties of cheese. But anyway,
I stand corrected, though.
I mean, and I think
none
the other thing...
None of them known to anyone else in Belgium.
None known to me.
Defence, that it's sandwiched between two very big cheese nations in France and the Netherlands, and perhaps, you know, it's kind of got in the shadow. But nonetheless, I think it has some excellent cheeses. But there we go. Anyway, let's
We're just going to keep going round and round and round. But, you know, there has been race... We can actually talk about racing that has happened since the Tour de France fan, most notably the Tour de Romandie. That was won by Lotta Kopecky. And it's kind of interesting, coming off of the Tour de France fam, obviously Lotta Kopecky wasn't there, and, you know, beforehand we were kind of saying, oh, it'd been kind of nice to see her there because she seems to have been building up her GC potential all year. But yeah, for her to win the Tour de Romandie, obviously another one of those moments that will have probably caught everyone's attention was the fact that Lotta Kopecky and Demi Vollering, teammates at Team SD Works, were sprinting for the line at the top of a 10-kilometre climb on stage two to go for the win, but Lotta Kopecky still holding on to the overall. I mean, we've kind of talked, Denny, haven't we, all year about, you know, what is her, you know, is she going to be a GC contender? She's still a track rider, you know, where does that leave us now?
I think she very much is a GC rider now. I mean, she's proved it already several times this year. Of course, second in the Giro, won the UAE Tour, won Tour of Britain Women. Now she's won the Tour de Romandie. In fact, the last time she finished off the podium in a stage race was September 2022 in La Vuelta.
Wow.
So she's a consummate GC rider. And I think the thing that Kopecky's got going for her is that she's just so good at getting time bonuses. I mean, she showed that in the Tour de Romandie, on the podium, every stage, picking up time bonuses. And I think what I loved about the Tour de Romandie, and I'm sure we'll come and talk about it in more depth, was her battle with her own teammate, Demi Vollering. But the fact that she could kind of cling on to Demi on the mountain, in the mountains, and then pick up time bonuses in the sprints shows just what a versatile rider she is. Arguably, she's perhaps lost some of the top end of her sprint. She didn't beat Balsamo. She didn't even beat Vollering in the end of the mountain stage. But she's got now enough all-round power to be a real contender on all types of terrain. So I think she's definitely a GC contender. And it was great to see, I guess, a taster of what we might get in 2025 with Demi Vollering and Lotta Kopecky going head-to-head, essentially.
Yeah, because then they'll be going head-to-head as non-teammates, if, you know, rumours are to believe, which we think. I mean, we know Vollering's leaving SD Works and Kopecky's saying for sure. So that'll be really exciting. But, I mean, it was remarkable, wasn't it, that they were the only two riders left on that climb. And just before that, they had Guy Raiolini, who is a totally different anatomy, a different type of rider entirely. She's kind of, you know, a tiny climber, pure climber. And, you know, Kopecky is much more powerfully built to still be in the running there. And, you know, Joe, what do you make of the teammates? Again, we saw it in Strada Bianchi, didn't we, before? But, you know, the teammates going against each other.
From a fan point of view, I love it. Like, I want to see the best riders in the world race against each other. Like, I don't want to see two riders come over the line together, both with their arms in the air, like, oh, isn't this wonderful? Like, I want to see the best race.
I love how people always think that's like a beautiful moment of sportsmanship. Joe's just like,
yeah,
no,
a little
so
bit bored.
Angry,
a little bit
people.
Bored with that. No, I want to see them race. And I totally get from the point of view, if you look at a professional team, like, is it a good look to have teammates race against each other? Still, personally, I think yes. Like, that's a far more exciting finish. To see that sprint finish rather than just see a sort of celebration ride over the line. So, I mean, I'm keen for them to race each other. I know I'm sure there has been difficulties this year. They do overlap a lot. If you think of the Venn diagram of the sort of races they can both win, there is that huge overlap. So I do think it will be good for the sport in many ways to have them on different teams. But no, I want to see them both race against each other. So I'm well up for that.
What would you think as a rider, Joe?
Oh, I probably would have had a very different opinion as a rider. Yeah, but I'm not anymore, so I can say what I like. No, I think if I were a rider, I would feel very differently about it. Oh, it's tricky. I think if you know you've got the win in the bag and the win is going to the team, I still would say it's fair game to sprint. The problem is when one rider perhaps doesn't agree with that and you've got have you had that discussion of we're not going to sprint, this person's going to win and someone's gone against it, we don't know exactly what's gone on with the conversations from the team car, then that's when things get really tricky. And there's nothing worse than a bad atmosphere in a team. Like, that's the number one thing you want for a team that you're riding for is to have that sort of harmony. So I can imagine feeling very differently if I were a rider and I had that situation in my own team, but I don't, so I can I can really enjoy the battles between the best riders in the world happily.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that's part of what has made those moments when Team SD Works have been riding against each other so kind of interesting to people, is that there is all these rumours of sort of bad blood or maybe not everyone's getting on. But I mean, I guess that was kind of maybe originally stoked by that Strada Bianchi when they raced against each other then. I mean, a lot of that feeling that maybe all's not well at SD Works or all's not well between Vollering and the rest of the team, it's kind of an ongoing conversation that we've had this year. But, I mean, why wouldn't they just race against each other? I mean, the riders said themselves, it seems the fairest way to decide it.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And also from a team perspective, they were really the only riders in the GC contest by the end of stage two. So it wasn't like they were going to shoot themselves in the foot and open the door to another rider taking GC there. So it was absolutely in the gift of the team and the riders to compete with each other and go for the win. I think one thing that was obvious though was that, and this is the narrative that we've spoken about all year, was that Damien Vollering very much had kind of one foot out of the SD Works door, appeared to be, in what she was saying in the post-race interviews. She admitted that she is leaving the team now, but also after stage two she talked about the fact that she wasn't sure about what the team tactics would be and whether the team would ride for her or ride for Capecchi. And she talked about the team as used the term they when she spoke about the team. So she was clearly in her mind someone who was kind of on the outside slightly of that team now, and the team's focus was very much on the rider, which they've signed to 2028, Lotta Capecchi.
And I do feel for her. Like, obviously I feel for her with everything that happened at the Tour de France. I also have a lot of faith she's going to win a lot of Grand Tours and a lot of bike races, and it's not like that was her one chance to get a big win and her superstar teammates taking it away from her. So I do have a lot of sympathy. But that to me is also about sort of building the narrative around women cycling. Like, the more we care about the riders as individuals and all we care about them winning, it's not just a bike rider sprinting for the line. It's that person that's had that bad luck or that crash or whatever it is. So I really am up for those stories developing. But I also think as well, the women's side of the sport, the salaries still aren't as high as the men's. The number of days of racing that's on TV is nowhere near the same. We technically have three Grand Tours, but if we're perfectly honest, the Tour de France is the only one that really gets the big media attention and the big spotlight. For men, they've got three Grand Tours a year. They've got 63 days of racing with that huge media spotlight on them. The women have got 7 days of that in the whole year. And I can see why you want to take opportunities a bit more in the women's side of the sport. And, no one's making life-changing amounts of money, or so far I don't think they are anyway. So I kind of do get it a bit more, and I get teammates racing against each other, and I do definitely feel sorry for certain individuals thinking it must not be nice if you're not happy in a team. But at the same time, I get it, because your career is short as an athlete, whatever sport you're doing. Women's cycling is still growing in terms of the media profile, the TV coverage, the money in the sport. So you've got to grab the chances when you've got them.
Well, we did talk to an agent, didn't we, when we were out at the Tour de France. Fam, who kind of said, never, it surprises me if there is this kind of situation where riders aren't working for their teammates because, you know, like you said, Joe, I mean, the contracts are so short. I mean, most riders are on 1 year contracts, 2 year contracts at max. Obviously, there are exceptions like Lotta Kopecky being there who will be at ST Works till 2028. But you'd think that you can't really that there's not enough time to foster that sort of bad blood when everyone is probably only in a team for 1 year anyway. But yeah, it's interesting that Demi Vollering at the start of the year, you'd say every stage race, surely ST Works are going to want her to win the stage races because she's the stage racer. But maybe it does give us a little bit of insight into where Kopecky is going to go. Obviously, you know, we had the track racing at the Olympics that Kopecky was involved with this year. But obviously we've got on an Olympic cycle, we've got another 4 years until, if she does want to then do that again, we've got another 4 years till the next Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kopecky's obviously got so much potential. I think maybe one of her challenges might be with the kind of, I guess, increasing specialisation of the women's side of the support of the sport. Where does she focus her efforts and training next year, because she could win so much on paper, but clearly she's got to choose her targets carefully and get the preparation right. So I think that will be her major challenge next year. Clearly she probably will have much more of a leadership role, or at least it will be clearer potentially who's the leader in some of those races.
Anna van der Breggen.
Well, as I was going to say, yes, we've got Anna van der Breggen, which is
interesting,
potential,
isn't it?
Plot twist. So how will they play it next year in the Tour de France fam? I guess we'll need to see what Anna van der Breggen her shape is like next year, but certainly with Demi Vollering gone, it does probably make things a little bit simpler within that team to manage the stars. Of course, they've got Lorena Wiebes as well, another big star and winner.
And we did at the Tour de Romandie also have a stage win from Rhianna Marcus, which was a very popular stage win, stage three. Just seeing her after the line, she almost got caught out though, didn't she? She actually yes. was in a breakaway with Nee Fisher-Black, two of them coming to the line. Rhianna Marcus opened her sprint out a little bit earlier, and then she kind of briefly sat up to celebrate, and then looked behind her and then realised it was too early to celebrate because Nee Fisher-Black was ploughing through, and then sat back down for probably, I don't know, 3 metres, and then stood back and celebrated. A wonderful win, but definitely a moment there of, I mean, we do always mention it when we see these kind of moments in cycling. It's surprising actually to me how often it happens when a rider sits up and celebrates too early and then gets pipped at the post. But obviously Rhianna Marcus avoiding that entirely. I mean, is it do you think that it's surprising to celebrate too early, or as someone who is was a rider, you can understand why you might do that? I always think it's crazy.
It's crazy when you get so many high profile riders do it on TV, and you'd think everyone's watching that, and you'd think you'd all think, right, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to be over the line before I celebrate, which is very reminiscent of Faulkner's win at the Olympic road race. Like, she was over that line, no celebration at all. Yeah. She even knew she'd won. So it's funny to me that you do get so many high profile riders do it and the mistake still happens. So I think we can forgive them, because if it happens to the best in the world, then, you know, who am I to say why are you doing that? And it gives us some entertainment as well, doesn't it? But yeah,
there's a much nastier side to you.
Like, it's always amusing.
Wanted people to fight and celebrate too early. And
yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know. I feel like when I first started bike racing, like one of the first things I was taught was like always lunge for the line. Like, the race is not over till it's over. Like, if you're sprinting, you come in second. Always do that lunge. And it's sort of one of those things that sort of drummed into you early on, yet the pros and the best in the world still seem to make that mistake. And, you know, we all have a good laugh about it, and it amuses us all. But, you know, there we go. I think when you're racing as well, I always think, like, in a sprint finish, for example, you sort of know when you've won, even when it's a photo finish. And when you're like away from people, you know, you sort of got that feeling like, I've got this. And it is that shock of when someone comes out of nowhere and takes that win away from you. So yeah, it is a funny feeling, because I think when you're in a bike race, you sort of know that you've got it, whether it is a sprint finish or a breakaway or whatever, until you haven't. Yeah. And you get completely taken by surprise.
But Rhianna Marcus knew that she might not have had it, so she didn't. She stopped, curtailed her celebrations and made sure she came across the line, beating Nee Fisher-Black. But a very popular victory, wasn't it, for Rhianna Marcus there, Denny?
Yeah.
And, you know, she hasn't had the best... I mean, as one of my picks for the Tour de France fam... she hasn't had the best time of it actually in recent months.
No, I mean, she always does seem to pick up a good win or two, and you know, getting a World Tour stage win was obviously great news for her. I mean, she has been touted as a potential GC contender, hasn't she, for a while?
I think that might have been touted by me actually.
Well, she did come second in the Vuelta.
Second in Vuelta, yeah.
So,
okay.
You know, she has proven herself at that level, but of course, I guess when it comes to, well, as Joe, as you said, the bigger stage of the Tour de France fam, she hasn't kind of shone in the way that perhaps, I think, I mean, Lizzie Banks touted her as a potential contender last year in our preview show. So she hasn't quite got to the heights that perhaps some people thought she might. But, you know, still time. And, of course, she's moving teams next year to Lidl Trek. So that's a team that will be looking for a new GC rider after, because Longo Borghini is going. So we may yet see the GC version of Rhianna Marcus that people have been hoping for.
And we did see, of course, that duo, Rhianna Marcus and Lee Fisher-Black, they will both be at Lidl Trek. They will be teammates next year. So that would be a really interesting... well, that would have been, again, like, you know, teammates sprinting against teammates again. But, yeah, I mean, they're very different riders, but both have GC potential, don't they? I mean, it's interesting to kind of try and project what Lidl Trek might be thinking. Obviously, they're losing Elisa Longo Borghini. We know that, although she's going to UAE ADQ, although that hasn't been officially announced. But yeah, it's an interesting way that they're building up their team next year, Joe, to have Nee Fisher-Black, who's quite still young and still getting the experience in GC races, but obviously has a lot of climbing potential, and Rhianna Marcus, who is kind of a time trialist who's kind of moving over into a GC position.
I see Rhianna Marcus as a good fit for Lidl Trek. I'm finding it really hard to get my head around Longo Borghini leaving. Like, in my head, she is Lidl Trek. I don't know why I can't unsee her in that jersey. So that's going to take a while to get my head around, especially any commentary work.
Yeah, exactly. Every time.
Not making that mistake. But I see Rhianna Marcus as a good fit for that team. I see Lidl Trek as, you know, SD Works is the team with probably the biggest names, you know, the team that everyone's looking at to win races. And I see Lidl Trek as perhaps the second biggest team in the women's side of the sport in terms of really being able to challenge at that level. But of course, that's with Longo Borghini, who's leaving. And yeah, haven't quite got my head around that one, but I shall work on that over the next few months. but yeah, I think Rhianna Marcus will be a good fit there. I think it's an interesting sort of lineup of people that we know are going there. Obviously, some will be staying. But in terms of the transfers that we've got next season, there are quite a lot of, like, in my head as well, Nee Fisher-Black is SD Works. That's another one that I'm going to really struggle to see her move. But I'm interested how she'll get on in that team and how they'll really sort of shape their stage races around their new GC riders. Because, of course, they did win Giro this year with Longo Borghini. Obviously, she's moving on, but I feel like they're that big team that really want to get those GC wins. And assuming we're not going to get a plot twist and see Demi Vollering go there, then I'm really excited how they'll be able to develop Rhianna Marcus. And like you say, she got second at the Vuelta, which is technically a Grand Tour. You know, there are plenty of mountains there, but it's just getting it right on the day when it comes to the really sort of high profile big one that's the Tour de France.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously they'll be joining Guy Raialini, who we for the last few years have kind of seen as the rider that they're trying to build up into a GC rider. But she, I mean, for how the sport is at the moment, she's still such a pure climber as opposed to, you know, the riders who actually win the races are kind of riders that can also win a classics race and can also win a Grand Tour at the moment. That's kind of the kind of riders. They're not so specialised that you can just be a really good pure climber and beat everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, their strategies for 2025 seems to be sign riders that are, I want to say, second tier, but it's not to denigrate them, but it's to say that they're kind of the riders that you might mention.
Let's just hope they're not listening, Debbie. We've definitely lost them now.
They'd be on the contenders list, but they wouldn't be on the fight. You know, you wouldn't give them five stars necessarily. They're riders that can win races. So, and they're riders that are kind of mid-20s mostly. So Nee Fisher-Black's 24. They've signed Anna Henderson and Emma Norsgaard, 25 both. And Rhianna Marcus is 30, slightly older. But the point is that they're all riders that are very strong riders. They do take wins, but they've still got potential to develop even further. And I think that's going to be, assuming Lidl Trek don't sign Demi Vollering, this is going to be what Lidl Trek are going to have to try and pull off next year. Try and get them to reach their potential, so that because we touted them as the big rival to SD Works in the Classics this year, and of course that was through Lungo Borghini mainly and her kind of tandem work with Van Anroy, and of course on the GC front it's Lungo Borghini again who's been leading that, so they need to try and make the most of that. Last year they signed a lot of juniors straight out of the junior ranks, so they'll have some kind of young teammates that they'll need to support them in their efforts. So yeah, really interesting strategy, very strong signings, but you wouldn't class any of them as the kind of out and out stars, so they'll need to kind of develop them into that, I think.
But that is kind of a trend that we've seen more widely, is these younger riders coming in. I mean, obviously we don't have an under 23 championship. We don't, have that structure of these under 23 races on the women's side. So, you do get younger riders coming in a bit earlier. But that is something that we're seeing more now than we ever have, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen that already this year. Kat Ferguson was the obvious one because she was signed last year when she was still a first year junior to Movistar, and she joined them as a trainee this summer. Shibden Apex teammate Imogen Wolf has been signed to Visma Lisa bike straight from the junior ranks, and Karis Lloyd as well, another British rider, has gone straight to Movistar from the junior ranks. So that trend of signing juniors straight to the World Tour seems to be continuing, if not increasing. Imogen Wolf is an interesting one because she, I guess, has been in the shadow of Kat Ferguson. Kat Ferguson has been just winning pretty much everything going in the junior ranks. She even came second in her first pro race with Movistar, a French race. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. And then came seventh in her second race. She's clearly still a junior, but already very, very impressive. Imogen Wolf has kind of run her very, very close. So I think she's another one to watch in the coming years.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by MAP.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, the World Championships are just around the corner. And of course, it gives us a great opportunity to crown the rider who should be the strongest rider in the peloton on that day, crown the rider who gets to wear the rainbow jersey for the rest of the year. But it also gives us a chance to check out some riders from countries that we don't often actually get to see in the European racing world. You know, we have riders from Guinea-Bissau and El Salvador all lining up at the World Championship. So this piqued my interest when we were at the Tour de France, fam, some of these riders who might be their only representative of their nation. So I caught up with some of them, and this is what they had to say.
First of all, Kim, can you tell us about Mauritius?
Well, yeah, maybe I should, because no one knows about it. it's an island in the middle of nowhere in the Indian Ocean. You got to kind of zoom in to look for it. Honeymoon destination, cocktails and sun tanning.
Tell us a bit about Cyprus.
Cyprus is a big island. For me, it's the best place to do your winter preparation as a cyclist or your off-season activities. But it's still a nice place for summer holidays.
Catalina, first tell us about Chile. What kind of a country is it?
Well, Chile is a very long country, so you can actually do whatever you want. We have really the driest desert all the way to the south with, snow and icebergs. And it's a really pretty place to visit. You have the ocean, which is the best for surfing. But then you can go up to the mountains, up to 5,000 meters, and, you know, go snowboarding or whatever you want.
You're like the best marketer for...
Yeah, I love my country. I love my country.
There you heard from Kim LaCourte, Andrew Cristoforo and Catalina Sotto. What do all of them have in common? Well, they were all the only riders from their respective countries at the Tour de France FAM. In fact, the same goes for pretty much every race they're in. In this month's mini feature, we delve into the stories of the outliers, the riders from beyond cycling's heartlands. First up, from the Roland team, Andrew Cristoforo from Cyprus.
What is the cycling culture there? Is it a big deal?
I can say we have a lot of hobby riders. We enjoy rides on weekends, but we don't have a lot of athletes, let's say. Maybe this year was our best year in road cycling. We have about 5 riders to race in small teams.
And how hard was it to go from living in Cyprus to becoming a professional racer?
It's really hard because I have to do long travels every time for the races. I also can't live in Europe because I have my family and my son. Also, the beginning was quite hard because nobody knows about Cyprus. We didn't have history about road cycling, so it was hard for me to trust me and give me opportunities. But yeah, I was lucky. I have nice people around me and I did what I did.
What's the biggest barrier to being from Cyprus and becoming a road racer? Is it opportunity or resources or just having the contacts?
Yeah, I think it's the contact because no one knows about Cyprus riders. And also our biggest problem is to know how to learn how to ride in a big bunch because we don't have a lot of riders. We did like races in about 20 people. And then you have with different categories, and then you have to race in 150 professional riders. For me, it was the hardest part. Now I'm 32, I'm a mom, and I feel a big difference between my age and the new generation. They are taking a lot of risk, they are very fast, and for me, I have no reason to ride like that. But yes, there is a huge gap. I like to watch them, but I can't follow them.
Are people surprised when you're back home and people ask you what you do and you say, I'm a bike rider?
Yeah. Most of the time they ask me, what's your job? I said, I'm a bike rider. What is this? And then they ask me if I have a salary from this. And then if it's a full-time job. I mean, we don't have the culture. It's not a real job for them. But for me, it was my dream. First dream was to participate in Olympics. But then I really want to have the life of a professional cyclist. And I enjoy my last 3 years as a professional.
Yeah, I know you've done the Tour de France FAM before, and you're so close to a win as well from the breakaway. Do you have a sense of what people know back in Cyprus about what you're doing here, or do people come and, you know, ask for a signature when you're back there?
The first year I took part with Human Power Hill, I received a lot of message from Cyprus, from people that I don't know. And it was a nice surprise that many, many people now watch Tour de France. Also, after the Netflix series, more people understand what we are doing, so we have more fans. And yes, I have more followers from Cyprus, let's say.
Do you feel like an inspiration, like a role model back
in
Cyprus?
I hope so. I don't know. I hope so. For me, if I inspire some, especially girls riders, I will be so happy.
And what does it feel like to ride? It's a magnificent jersey as well.
Yeah.
It's like the full flag, isn't it?
I think every year, every race, someone asks me, what is this jersey? And I always say it's Cyprus flag. So now more people know what is this, and I'm proud of this.
Is it growing in Cyprus, or can you see that there's a new generation coming through?
Yes, we have a lot of kids now. It's... a lot of kids choose to do cycling, it's not just football like before. So we have more also teenagers, and I think every year is better and better, and it's a good sign.
From the Laboral Kutcher team, Catalina Sotto from Chile.
What was it like for you when you were a kid, you know, getting on the bike? I mean, did you ever think that there was a chance to be a professional racer?
No. In Chile, it's impossible to dream of being a bike rider when you're young because we only show football, soccer, and that's it. And like you're either really good at that or you just go back to work and schools. It's really hard for them to support you in that, like if you want to train and then go for a race, it's really hard unless you pay for a really expensive sports schools. You don't really get the opportunities. And then when I was growing up, I never really raced with girls. So now I'm racing with 140 and it's like, oh, insane. And I know that there's 140 here, but then there's so many more, you know, dreaming about being here as well.
And what was it like in terms of getting the resources you need, getting the bikes that you need back when you were in Chile?
You know, I was always a kid with a lot of energy. So my mom, she bought me a track bike and she took me to all the races and she did a lot of that effort. And my family always supported me. They went to watch me race. And it was just an activity that I used to do day by day. But in the meantime, I would go to, you know, a national championship for fun and I would win it. And then we would go to another event and probably I was the youngest and I would probably get second or get in the podium. And she really started incentivizing that. And then more than, you know, having a really nice bike or kit, it was about having my friends and riding with my friends and having fun after school and riding up the mountain that we had in Chile.
When you were a kid, were you racing against other girls or did you have to go in the boys' races? Or?
I used to race with the boys, yeah, a lot. And I'm still friends with them now and we text because we are from the national team, like we're still friends. And I tell them, like, it's insane. I show them everything around here because they are not professional either. They race in Chile and we represent the country.
And obviously you moved to Australia when you were a teenager. Do you think that was actually important for you to become a professional bike rider? Do you think if you stayed in Chile, you wouldn't necessarily...
Yeah, exactly. In Australia, I realized that you can actually be a pro rider because, you know, I was racing in summer, I don't know, the St. Kilda Crits or back at Brunswick, and I would see pro riders coming back home and they will tell us all about it. You know, if you don't have that feeling with people, if you don't really see that as a reality, you can't really think of it. Maybe you can imagine it, but it's really hard to actually, you know, think, oh yeah, I can do this. It's like, I always watch the tour, but I never really thought like, oh, you know, I would like to race that. But when the Tour de France Femmes was on, I was like, wow. And I really couldn't stop watching. And now that I'm here, it's like, wow, I'm here, this is so nice. And it is crazy, like the race lives up to its name.
And do you have any sense of, now you're at the Tour de France Femmes, how much of that news gets back to Chile? Obviously there's a lot of South American media, normally Colombian, aren't they, over here? But does the news get to Chile? Do people kind of message you because they've heard what you're up to?
I know there's a cycling channel that they pull every day, like what my result is and where am I in GC. My friends, they send me pictures of that. And yeah, the people is really lovely. Like they have sent me nice messages. Social media is kind of crazy like that when, you know, there's a lot of exposure in different places. And I've been really thankful because you get to realize what you're actually doing at one point. Like, of course, it was my dream and I know how big this is and I'm trying to take it all in. And I'm really happy that it's, you know, it's being able to, people in back home and in South America, they are able to see it. And, you know, I hope I can represent not only my country, but the whole Latin American continent really well.
Yeah, how important is it to have that representation, to be a Chilean rider at the biggest race in the world?
As I said before, when I was young, I didn't really see any idols in cycling. Like my idols were a swimmer back in Chile and a triathlete. So now I think in a way I am a motivation to them. The girls do text me and they're like, oh, I actually got like really nice messages about like, oh, thank you for like inspiring us and showing us that it's possible, you know, to race 3 Grand Tours, the Olympics, the World Championships, that it is possible. So it's big, but I'm trying to, I don't really think about it too much. I know the girls are there looking at me, so I really try to just be, I guess, a good example. And yeah, I hope I can make them all proud. And I hope they can also dream with me because that's what it's all about.
And AG Insurance's Kim LeCourt from Mauritius.
What is the cycling scene like in Mauritius? I mean, is there one at all?
Yeah, it's pretty small. There is one, but it's really small. But it's growing throughout the years. It's bigger in the mountain bike scene than the road scene, and there's a lot of people from overseas that come and move into Mauritius, so they make the community bigger in the cycling scene. But yeah, it's really small, and they don't really understand the world of this, the world tour world, because we've never experienced it, obviously, unless you come to this side. But yeah, it's small, but big hearts.
Did you grow up there, or were you there and until when did you leave?
Yeah, I was born there. My parents still live there. My brother lives in France, and yeah, I did all my schooling there. So yeah, it's my home.
Did you watch any cycling back then?
I only started watching when I was about 15 or something. Not younger, actually. When there were cyclists on the high, because you can ride on the highway in Mauritius, it's that small. We would get really annoyed with them, like they're in the middle of the road or whatever. But now it's us. But yeah, I didn't watch as much. I was more into soccer.
And is it like mountains, or I mean, obviously I know the beaches, but is it like one of those islands with a big mountain in the middle? And can you cycle up them? Or?
Yeah. There's like a really big mountain, actually, of like 20 or 25 k's, where you can easily do a 45-minute effort, and pretty good average of gradient. But I mean, one or two big mountains. It's not like me now, where I'm staying in the season in Girona. It's really not the same, and there's dogs everywhere.
Imagine logistically, you know, on an island in the middle of the Indian Ocean, it's not like you can go into any bike shop and get the thing that you need. Like, how did you go through that struggle, and what did you do then?
Yeah, I mean, even till now, my dad wouldn't buy like a specific bike, because if he buys a top end bike, we wouldn't have the top end things in Mauritius. But yeah, I mean, I moved out pretty early. I went to South Africa first, and then kind of moved to Europe and back to South Africa. So I was all over the show. I wasn't only based in Mauritius, but it is difficult, and financially it is also really hard, because we don't have any help. If you're not supported by a World Tour team, it's not that easy.
And what do you know of how much people are watching it at home, or, you know, what kind of feedback do you get from now that you're in the World Tour?
Yeah, since I've come into the World Tour and kind of started performing and putting the flag on the scene, it's been, the support has been insane. I've just, yeah, it's been more than I expected. It's been a dream, and it helps so much. I think people don't realize how much it touches me and motivates me to go harder.
And have you come to see it as a great opportunity now? And, you know, how do you get used to that, you know, being a role model effectively?
Yeah, I think it's a great place to be in. I think I've always wanted to try and get more girls on bikes as well, and motivate, you know, that you, even if you come from an African country in a smaller area where it's not something you're used to do or be at, I think I'm able now to get more people on bikes, and even the guys, to motivate people to say that we can be here on the World Tour and it's possible. Just have to obviously get the right contacts and the right headspace.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Well, amazing stories there from Antri Christoforou, Catalina Sotto, and Kim LaCourte, who obviously we've spoken a lot about, haven't we, Denny? We've been kind of raring to speak to Kim all season after having such a fantastic classics season in the spring. But yeah, the World Championships around the corner. I mean, Denny, what can we expect? We're not going to talk about the time trial, because I think that's too close to now, almost, apart from, you know, mentioning that Grace Brown is in the running there, and Lotta Kopecky and Ellen van Dijk and Demi Vollering, all the riders that you would expect, and Chloe Dygert, all the riders you'd expect to be up there. But the road race, Denny, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, of course, the World's taking place in Switzerland, finishing in Zurich, but the road race that the women face starts in Uster and finishes in Zurich. It's 4.1 kilometers long, and there's over 2,000 meters of climbing, 2,250 to be precise. So it's a very hilly course, features a circuit as you'd expect in the Worlds, and there are four laps of the main circuit after a kind of introductory after the introductory kilometers. So it has been likened to kind of an Ardennes type course. Peter Sir has kind of likened it to the stage she won at the Tour de France Femme, the Ardennes Megamix, which you coined, Rose. And it's slightly longer than that, but it has more climbing. So, it's going to definitely be one that kind of favours the riders that thrive in the hills, those that we see kind of coming to the fore in the Ardennes.
We've got a circuit, don't we, which has two climbs on it. The Zürichbergstrasse, which is 1.1 kilometres long at an average of 8%, which is a bit like the Côte des Forges, which is the Liège-Bastogne-Liège sort of alternative climb, and the Witticon, which is a fantastic name, which is 2.3 kilometres at an average of 5.7%. How are you liking that, Joe? Would you like to have a go on that one? I think I know the answer.
It's very easy to say now I'm retired. Maybe with an electric bike. That might help me a little bit. Love the electric bikes now. I'm really excited for World's Road Race. I always am. It's always different to any other race. It's always, you know, you can predict the favourite and then something happens and you're like, oh, didn't see that coming. Having said that, I still think Capecchi can win on this course, which would be fantastic to be able to defend that rainbow jersey if she could do that. Obviously, the Dutch team is super strong. Any one of them could win the bike race, which is often what makes it even more tricky, because there isn't an out-and-out leader and no one else will quite know who they're working for. They themselves might not quite know who they're working for. So that will keep us entertained as viewers. But again, tricky as a rider. Also interested in Cassia Nuviadoma for World's Road Race, having the season that she's had and the confidence that she must have. I'm not quite sure where her form is going to be as of next weekend. I mean, how much has she enjoyed herself post Tour de France Femme? I don't know. And, you know, fair play, whatever she wants to do. But just given the season she's had and that confidence, maybe a Polish win.
The thing that's going to go against Cassia Nuviadoma is the fact that it finishes, it's a little bit flat at the finish, isn't it? So, I mean, if she's kind of bringing anyone to the line, it's that kind of typical situation with Cassia Nuviadoma that if she's there and she's only got Lotta Capecchi for company, then Capecchi's going to win. Or if Vollering's her only company, then Vollering's going to win. It's a really tough situation, actually, for her to be in, that not having that, quite having that sprint that you need might put her out of the running. But it's so interesting, isn't it? Also, she's, you know, got a Polish team, which, you know, if you compare the kind of the riders in that team to the riders, like you said, in the Dutch team, they're just kind of worlds apart. But I mean, I think Cassia Nuviadoma is actually a rider who's very used to, I mean, Canyon SRAM have come on leaps and bounds in recent years, but used to be a very good solo rider. So, you know, for her trade team even, she used to kind of work out a way of winning races or doing well in races without any teammates around. But Denny, looking at the teams, who do you see outside of the Netherlands team, who obviously can boast Vollering and Paulina Royackers and Shirin van Anroy, Marianne Vos, Misha Bredevold, Rihanna Marcus, Puk Pieterse? Outside of that, is there anyone, and outside of Lotta Capecchi, of course, you know, who else are you looking
at? It's an intimidating lineup, isn't it, for the Dutch? Well, I mean, I guess a bit like Cassia Nuviadoma, whose, I guess, form will be a bit unknown going into this race. She hasn't raced since the Tour de France Femme. We have Elisa Longo Borghini, who's been the other standout rider of this year, won the Giro, of course, had an excellent classics season, but she couldn't ride the Tour de France Femme because she had a training accident. And although she has done, I think, one day of racing since then, we don't really know where her form is at. But she's certainly a rider that, if she's on top form, she will be a threat. I think the rest of the riders, I think there are kind of a handful of kind of dark horses, outsiders. Elise Jabe, I'm sure, will be super motivated because she's been on home turf. You've got riders like Liana Lippert, Blanca Vass, who came so close, of course, in the Olympic road race. Anna Henderson, riders that I guess could, if depending on how things play out, stand a chance of winning, but you wouldn't put them in the, perhaps to go back to the tiers, the top tier, you wouldn't give them the five stars. So there are lots of exciting riders there, and I think it will come down, or partly come down, could come down to team tactics and as you alluded to, Joe, how the Dutch play it, because they will need to have a clear strategy. And I think the risk with having such a strong team, as we always reflect, is who are they riding for? And is it clear who they're riding for? And are they riding for the right person at the right time? And That could, you know, if they get it wrong, that could give the opportunity to a rider like Henderson or Lippert or Vass to get away.
Who would you be backing, Joe, if you were the DS for the Dutch team?
Oh, that's a really horrible question. Oh, that's the worst question you've asked me. Oh, dear.
We could go back to the Belgian cheese thing if you want.
Yeah, but. I mean, I got off the fence with the Belgian cheese thing. But, oh, I mean, a lot of my heart says Demi, especially after the disappointment of Tour de France Femme. Like, you sort of feel like this is the year, this is the course for her. Having said that, I don't know if it is completely the course for her. If I'm brutally honest, and there's so much talent in that Dutch team that it really could go either way. Am I sitting myself firmly on the fence there?
I mean,
I sort of gave an answer at the start there. I'd back Demi. But yeah, no, it's tricky because I feel like if the climbs were later in the course, you'd be like, well, obviously Demi, but they're quite early, and I'm envisaging a very aggressive race and maybe a small group. And I'm also thinking about the American squads and sort of what they're bringing with Faulkner as the Olympic champion, the Australian squad. And I think the greatest strength for the Dutch is they've got the options, but that's also the greatest weakness. Mm. So, I'll stay firmly on that fence.
Yeah, but to be honest, you've given an answer which is probably like exactly what the Dutch team are thinking themselves, aren't they? Because, I mean, that is where they do get a bit caught out because they've got so many talent. Well, Denny, I should give you the same question. If you were the DS at the Netherlands team, then, you know, who would you be backing?
I try not to sit on the fence completely, but it is always tricky, of course, because decisions have to be made on the road. There are no race radios in the world, and that creates a completely different dynamic. So you can't have a DS calling it from the car or even from the safety of a podcast. They do have options, and Vollering's going to have a free role. But as you say, Joe, if she's not clear by 20K, 10K to go, then really they're going to have to default to somebody like Vos, potentially, who can climb well. And Puk Pieterse, of course, we saw her win that Liège stage in the Tour de France Femme. She has just won the mountain bike cross-country world championship. She's going for the roads here, and then she's going to go for the gravel world championship. So she's kind of aiming for a historic treble. Yeah. So she's such an exciting rider as well, isn't she? So I guess as a DS, there are so many options, but Vollering would have a free role, but then you'd be looking at Vos or Pieterse if it comes down to a kind of reduced bunch sprint, I guess.
It's interesting also that you said that Puk Pieterse had kind of flagged that it was similar to that Ardennes stage. I feel like you don't say that unless you think that you are in a good position to possibly win the World Championships course as well. I don't think you compare it to something that you've already won unless that is the case. But so much of this is going to come down to form, because we really haven't seen a lot of the riders we haven't seen race since the Tour de France Femme, and other riders we saw at Tour de Romandie and perhaps not having the legs that you would expect them to. I mean, Paulina Royakkers will probably be a domestique, won't she, for the Dutch team in the World Championships. But the likes of Evita Muziek and Antonia Niedermayer got dropped quite early on that climb in stage two at the Tour de Romandie. So they're obviously not, perhaps, you know, maybe they're more fatigued than we would expect them to be.
And it's been a tough season. Tour de France has come a lot later in the season than it would usually be. The Olympics has got right in the middle of that as well, which for a lot of riders would have been a big target, but then also for a lot of the peloton, also not involved in that. So it has been, it's always a strange season in Olympic year, and I do love that sort of discussion around how that changes things. But yeah, I think with Tour de France, that's a huge target for everybody. With that being relatively late, it is that how do you manage your recovery and then come to Worlds with that sort of form that you want, which was interesting for me, particularly looking at Lotte Kopecky, who was obviously in brilliant form at Romandie, then won the European Championships time trial, opted not to ride the road race to focus on her prep for the World's road race. So from a sort of outside perspective looking in, she seems to be the rider that's very much stated her intentions in terms of, I've got a very clear target here. I'm not, you know, I've planned my season, not just, you know, she obviously didn't ride Tour de France Femme, she did ride the Olympics, she did get a medal there. So that to me shows a lot of intention about she's keen to get this right on the right day, as she did last year as well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, Vollering is very good at preparing for races, but of course, you'd imagine that her big goal was the Tour de France Femme. So whether she can hold on to her form for the Worlds, I guess, will be a question mark. Peter has been gone to altitude after the mountain bike championships in preparation for the world. So she's clearly gunning for this. Going back to your DS question, I guess a good DS will have to listen to the riders and try and understand what their form is like, because that's another, and riders will need to try and be as honest with each other as possible, because if you've not got the legs but you're saying you want to be at leadership role, then that causes problems.
And it is that funny thing where you're having to be honest to people who most of the year are your rivals and suddenly you're kind of working together. It's kind of a very different way of working, isn't it? Suddenly you've got to be honest and go for the win for the team, which is actually most of the time not your team. But I mean, it's also interesting, we should say also with Capecchi, that her Belgian team, I mean, we used to kind of always, the Belgian team used to always not, didn't used to be one of the strongest teams, but actually now that they have the likes of Julie van der Velde and Justine Heerkere, both riders who did really well at the Tour, did very well on that Ardennes stage. And then we also saw Laura de Schepper doing really well on that climbing stage at the Tour de Romandie as well. So Capecchi actually also has a much stronger team than she would have done a few years ago. But yes, that's the World Championships. That's coming up next week. I'm sure we'll be all watching. Joe, what are you doing for the World Champs?
Yeah, I'll be doing some commentating.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'll be with the Eurosport team for the road race. So, yeah, very excited, and we'll get busy revising the course and knowing exactly what to look out for. But yeah, super excited for it. And yeah, I'll be calling some of the racing along with Marty's also a commentator, and the two Dannys as well. So strong team we've got.
Oh, amazing. Right. Well, we look forward
to... No DS quandaries there.
No, no, we're all sorted.
I know, we're going to be listening very intently now, Joe, to your commentary about whether you say that Vollering, you know, when Vollering wins, you're like, well, you know, everyone would have said that Vollering was 100%.
She was clearly the leader. Yeah.
Quite clearly. But yes, that's all to come. Well, next month, we are going to be back next month. We're going to be back a little bit later in the month, because I need to have a baby between now and then. But we'll be back, and we will also be bringing you an Arrivé, hopefully, also if the baby doesn't arrive too early, bringing you an Arrivé from that World Championships road race as well. So that's when you'll be hearing us next. Well, thank you very much, Joe, for joining us. I hope that you're not put off by the DS questions. We can bring more cheese content back.
It's just specifically the Dutch team DS question is going to be a tricky one for anybody to answer. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. And thank you, Denny, as well.
Thank you, Rose.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.